Hi, my name is Blythe Alberg, and I would like to welcome you to the Cut the Fat podcast. Visit us at www.cutthefatpodcast.com. If you're new to us, we suggest that you listen to the first 3 to 5 podcasts for the basic toolbox on fat loss.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Cut the Fat Podcast. I'm joined here in the studio, of course, with my co-host, Blythe Alberg. Good evening, Blythe. How are you doing?
Good evening. I am fantastic. How are you doing today?
I'm awesome, man. It's a whole new year, and we are just pushing forward.
We are pumped up, guys.
Yes, and we hope that you are as well. Today's topic, well, we're going to start by basically talking about, you know what? It's a whole new, fresh year. So what can we do to kind of push forward and take our efforts to a whole new level?
I think taking it to a whole new level is a key phrase here. You can be a healthy eater, but there's always a new level to take it to. So wherever you're at, try just taking another baby step up and increasing your awareness about weight loss.
Absolutely. And, you know, why don't we start by answering the question, you know, what is it that's motivating us to kind of get up and take action? You know, this is not easy stuff to implement. It's a whole lot easier for us to kind of sit back on the couch and watch TV. It takes great effort to kind of get up, hop on the treadmill, and walk while you're watching, let's say, The Biggest Loser or some other show, right?
That's right. It's a lifestyle change, and we talk about that all the time. It's not just making your mind up for a week and pushing yourself to the gym for the month of January. It's making a lifestyle change.
Absolutely. And so you got to really get to what motivates you. Now, don't accept somebody else's idea of motivation. You know, for some people, motivation is about protecting their health and protecting their heart. Mm-hmm. You know, some people go to the doctor. The doctor says, look, you know, you better do something or you're going to kill over of a heart attack within the next, 6 months. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that's great motivation. For others, it's just not being able to fit in your jeans. If that's your motivation, well, for goodness sake, say it. Don't accept, I want to protect my heart. If that doesn't get you up in the morning to exercise and to eat well, ignore it. Be okay looking in the mirror and saying, you know what? I'm going to fit my butt in those jeans by, 3 months from this point.
Right. That's a realistic goal. And I hope that most of our listeners out there are not waiting to hear from their doctor, you know, you're about to have a heart attack. Let's do something now. Please, it doesn't have to get to that point.
Absolutely. So, your first homework assignment, all right, for the new year. Now, some of you guys are listening to this podcast well after the point when we recorded. I know that we get a lot of you guys who kind of come in, months after these podcasts are recorded. That's cool. You know, new year doesn't have to necessarily be January. A new year for you can start right now.
It can start today.
Right. And I don't want people to get caught up in this whole New Year's resolution thing because it's a ridiculous concept.
Right.
You can start your new life today.
I wonder who came up with that concept. I mean, that's kind of like a rhetorical question. I'm just throwing it out there. But why does it have to be January 1 that we finally decide this is the definitive date? We are making changes as of this date. Can we just wipe the slate clean and start fresh now?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, that's the type of mentality I want you to take on right now. Because, you know what? We all fall off the wagon. You know, Blythe, I know you do. I know that I do.
Yeah.
And when we do,
it's only part of life. That's natural.
Absolutely.
But I think the difference between people who are waiting to hear that horrible news from their doctor that you're going to have a heart attack in the next 6 months if you don't make changes, and somebody who makes healthier choices like us as our lifestyle, is we just get back on the wagon the next day. We make mm-hmm. we understand that we can make a change now.
And you know what? I've said this before. I'll say it again. I have good news for you, and I've got bad news. The bad news is, well, the good news is, change is slow. Change happens slowly. So if you mess up today mm-hmm. and if you have, let's say, a brownie sundae, you're not going to put on 2 pounds in a day of fat, right?
No, not of fat. No way.
And it's the good news and the bad news. Because the bad news is if you change your life today, you're not going to wake up tomorrow 2 pounds lighter either.
That's right.
So you just got to accept it.
Yeah.
You just got to accept it.
Yeah, you're totally right. That kind of leads us to one of the things we were going to talk about today is mindful eating versus mindless eating. And I know that a lot of us don't rely on that hungry feeling. I know I said in a previous podcast that I enjoy being hungry every once in a while. It's kind of like that thin feeling that you get, you know, when you haven't eaten, not necessarily eaten in a while, but you've made really healthy choices for a few days and you get to the point where, geez, I'm getting hungry every third or fourth hour. I feel like it's time to eat. And you kind of get back into the natural rhythm of your body of feeling like you need a refill of fuel.
Absolutely. That, you know, that's what we call mindful eating. Now, we're going to talk about mindful eating. We're going to talk about mindless eating. Mindful eating is a very, very easy concept. And it's basically this. You basically pay attention to what your body's telling you. We oftentimes, we get caught up in everything else that we're doing. We often eat while we work. Mm-hmm. We eat while we watch TV. We eat while we talk. Mm-hmm. We eat while we watch movies. You know, so while we're doing that, we're directing our attention away from our signals within our body. And that's not an example of mindful eating. Mindful eating is about sitting down to eat, not to do other stuff.
Right. Your project for the moment is to eat.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And listening to your body. What does it feel like? What does the food feel like in your mouth? What does the texture, the taste feel like? That allows your brain to know that you're actually eating good food. And then what happens is the brain begins to get signals that food is entering the stomach. As the stomach inflates with food, those signals get registered by the brain. But when it's distracted by everything else, guess what? Those signals take much longer for your brain to kind of register them. So you may eat in, let's say, 10 minutes while you're watching TV. But if you're being mindful, you might slow that process down. Give the brain a chance to eat, which takes about how long? About 20 minutes for the brain to register that you've eaten a full meal.
Right.
So that's mindful eating, is just sitting back, paying attention to what you're doing, and allowing the natural signals within your body and brain to kind of register.
Kind of reestablishing a balance, right? You know, you hear it all the time from your family doctor or even commercials on TV. Sit down and talk with your family. Have a sit-down dinner. Even if you sit down by yourself, if you're single, there's more to sitting down and eating than just stopping what you're doing to eat. It is for all the reasons that you listed. Your body will actually pay attention to what you're doing. You'll start getting those signals. You'll be more mindful.
Right. And believe it or not, you know, even though I just talked about mindful eating, I've kind of hybridized the two concepts of mindful eating and mindless eating into what I call mindful-less eating.
Okay.
Now, I know that sounds like a contradiction, mindful eating and mindless eating, but you're going to kind of catch on and understand where I'm going with this shortly. And that's what we're going to dedicate the majority of today's show talking about, mindless eating, the science of mindless eating. Guys, this is an exciting topic. You will not want to miss this. So, you know, if you're hitting the treadmill, will you guys continue to run? You can always listen to it later and take notes later. But for now, just tune the ears up and listen.
And let us motivate you.
All right, guys. So let's get talking about this concept called mindless eating. Now, this was developed by Dr. Brian Wansink, who has dedicated over 20 years in the study of hunger and satiety. And basically, through his research, he's determined that our satiety and hunger is really not determined by our stomachs, which most people believe it is. Mm-hmm. It's in fact determined by our eyes and our brain. So basically, our environment, how we set our table, basically determines how much food we consume.
So now, he wrote the book on mindless eating, and there are a whole bunch of tips and tricks and suggestions in there that you can put to use right away. We're going to mention some of those today.
Some of the key points. You guys will get tremendous amount of useful information from today's show, but we still highly recommend you get the book because there are more concepts in there that you can also use as well.
Correct.
Okay, so we've talked about tools and techniques like calorie counting in the past. These are what we call therapeutic lifestyle changes. These are things that we are tools and tactics that we use in our lifestyle to kind of, you know, figure out where we are and then recalibrate the brain to a healthier lifestyle.
Right. It kind of brings an awareness to where you're currently living your life.
Right. And then we can consciously change your lifestyle by keeping close tabs on how much you're eating, right?
Right, for sure. And the best way to do that is by logging and calorie counting at the beginning.
Right.
It doesn't have to continue and be that way throughout, you know, your weight loss journey.
Right. And that's the purpose of today's show, to kind of make that shift from that kind of hardcore calorie counting type lifestyle. And don't get me wrong, if you really respond well to that and you love doing it.
Oh, continue.
In your life, continue it. Right.
Sure, by
but
all means.
I'd say the majority of people who kind of pursue a weight loss program, I think they get frustrated with that whole kind of strict and stringent type approach. And so now we want to kind of help you make the transition to what we call the mindless approach.
Sounds great.
Okay. So a key concept of the mindless eating principle is that we should really only make small changes to our diet in order to achieve long-term success with weight loss, right?
Uh-huh. I think that's always kind of the story. You know, the small changes that you can actually stick to, they don't impact your life huge, you know, on a huge scale, but it's enough to make a difference.
And it's enough to make a difference that you can maintain for long periods of time.
And that's the key
right
there.
So I'll give you an example. If we had, for instance, somebody who was supposed to eat 2,500 calories a day, that's what their body needed in order to function, right?
Okay.
Then we say, okay, well, let's put you on a diet. We're going to take away 1,000 calories. So I want you to eat 1,500 calories a day. And what do you think would happen to their bodies and their metabolism if we cut out 1,000 calories a day?
Your body's going to go into a starvation mode. From there, you'll lose some initial weight, but you're going to set the cards up against yourself, and you're not going to be able to maintain that.
Right, and that's why I think the mindless principles are very helpful, because the whole goal is to just make some minor changes in your diet, to cut your caloric intake by, let's say, 100 or 200 calories a day without having to think about it.
That's totally realistic.
Right, and if you count the calories and add them all up over a year's period, 100 calorie a day deficit will result in 10 pounds. 200 calories could result in 20 pounds.
Now, after a year?
After a year.
Okay.
In reality, that may not be 10 or 20 pounds just from that 100 or 200 calories, but it might be 5 or 10. It all depends on the metabolism. It all depends on what types of calories you're talking about. But the key concept here is small changes give you results that you can maintain for your entire life, right?
That sounds perfect. And it's progressive. I love that.
Yes. And it's subconscious, which is extremely important.
Yes.
Because we want to take the conscious brain out of this process.
That's right.
If we can do that, life gets a whole lot easier for us.
Okay. So let's talk about people who have already decided to eat healthy foods. They already know what kind of foods they should be eating.
Right.
But
the problem is then the quantity.
Okay.
Right? So if you decide to eat a healthy food, what ends up happening is you kind of let your brain go and you eat as much as you want until you quote unquote feel satiated.
So you can eat a humongous salad, but you're still getting as many calories as you would as if you went and got some fast food?
Yeah, that can happen, Okay. Especially if you're eating at Cheesecake Factory.
I think
where their salads are, what, 1,000 calories
it's
in
like
some
a
situations.
Boat. Right. Okay. So I think this is where a lot of people get stuck and discouraged. For example, say you bring a bag of grapes to work, mm-hmm. and you sit there and you're doing your work, you're talking on the phone, or even if you're on your lunch break, you're sitting there on your computer typing away, eating away at the healthy food you brought. You could easily eat a pound of grapes in one sitting. That's right about 300 calories, 80 grams of sugar. Even
right.
though it's coming from fruit,
that's
a heck of a lot of sugar.
I've seen
in
kids
one serving.
Do that.
Yes.
You know, we used to when I was a kid, we used to bring buy a couple pounds of grapes and just dump them into a big bowl.
Just a big, huge bowl, yeah.
And we used to just pack them while we watched cartoons on Saturday morning.
Right. And now it's a healthy food choice, but again, it's the quantity of what
yes.
you're eating. So let's put this into perspective. Say you grab a Snickers bar off the shelf when you're at the grocery store. 280 calories in a Snickers bar and half of the carbohydrates.
Compared to that of the grapes.
The grapes, mm-hmm. right. So you can drown yourself in good food is the point I'm getting at. And
the point isn't that we want to
I'm not suggesting
Snickers.
Eat a Snickers bar. Right. I'm not suggesting go out and buy a Snickers bar instead of your grapes for lunch, because that's just not a good food choice.
Right.
But we need to be mindful of how much. A Snickers comes in a wrapper and it's a portion.
I think you said it best. You can drown yourself in good, healthy foods, yep. right, if you eat too much of them. So the whole point of mindless eating is to set the stage or set the plate in such a way that the brain eats less without having to consciously think about it.
Okay.
And so that's what we're going to get into with today's principles. And why don't we go ahead and start with principle number one of mindless eating? And that basically is this: change the size of the bucket.
I love this one. I love this one. It's a great one.
There was a fascinating study that Dr. Wansink talks about, and it's one of my favorites in the book, where they basically took a bunch of people in Philadelphia, some Philadelphia residents, basically, at a movie theater. Okay. And they offered them free popcorn while they watched, I think it was a Mel Gibson movie.
Okay.
Not that that matters, but it was
just
a, it was a regular
flavor
movie,
to the
right?
story. Right, yes. Okay.
And not known to these people, they did two things. First of all, the popcorn was 14-day-old stale popcorn. So it was bad popcorn. Now, it was stale, but they made it stale in a sterile environment so that it was still safe.
Okay.
So basically, they gave them 14-day-old stale popcorn. One group got a big, huge bucket of popcorn. The other group got a medium bucket of popcorn. Okay. So they sent them into the movie. At the end of the movie, they basically had them come out, and they determined how much popcorn the people had eaten. And these are very, very well-controlled studies. What they determined was the people who were given the large bucket ate 31% more popcorn than the group that was given the medium bucket, even though they all got stale, 14-day-old
stale
popcorn.
Nasty, and
and
they
even
more.
Said it. They even said it was stale and nasty pizza, popcorn.
Oh, great.
And they still ate it. That's what's amazing.
That is crazy.
Now, they did another study. This one was in Chicago, where they basically did the same study, but they gave them fresh popcorn.
Okay.
And when the popcorn tasted good, the group who was given the large bucket ate 50% more rather than 31% more in the group that was given the stale popcorn.
Oh my gosh, 50%. And we both know that movie theater popcorn is not the healthiest choice of food.
Not to say
that when you go to the movie theater, you can't have popcorn, but, you know, go a healthier alternative, pop your own and bring it.
Right. The whole point, the whole mindless principle here is it's the size of the bucket that determines how much you eat, not your stomach. So when you go to the movies, let's say you love going to the movies. Not only do you love going to the movies, you love having popcorn mm-hmm. when you go to the movies.
Okay.
Don't ever buy the extra large jumbo size popcorn, right?
You know what? Go with the kid's size. Why not? You can eat the whole bag, and that's still less than 50% of the large bucket.
It is. And I'm one of those people who likes to go to the movie theater, likes to enjoy a movie with some popcorn and a soda. And some people like candy. Mm-hmm. If you go in, and I do this when I go to the movie theater, I order the kids' meal, which is basically a very tiny vat of popcorn, a little like snack-sized packet of some sort of candy.
Okay.
And I usually get a Coke Zero or a Diet Coke
okay.
to go with that. And the truth is, I don't always eat it all.
Isn't that crazy? Because if you had a big old bucket of popcorn,
oh, I can tell you,
you
would
probably
tear that up.
Eat half of it.
Right.
Yeah.
My brothers used to get the big bucket. Now they all get the children's meal, which
okay.
is great.
Because it's a great suggestion.
Right.
I love it. Great
so
idea.
You basically just taken one major piece of the puzzle out of the picture, and that is the size that you're getting. Now it's not just the fact that you don't have enough, because even when the people got the medium sized popcorn, most of the time they didn't finish it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but because it was a medium-sized popcorn and their brain was able to register that, they just ate less.
That totally makes sense to me. And this is a rule that you can apply to everything. So if you do go to the Cheesecake Factory and they bring out a big boat of salad to you, you don't have to eat the whole bowl. I hear parents all the time tell their children, finish your plate. You know, kids, I think, are a lot more balanced than adults when it comes to eating. And I think that they will eat until they're satiated.
And what determines whether or not they're satiated is the size of the meal. Let me just make this single point, which goes right in line with that. Mm-hmm. In America, you know, first of all, when we say serving size, when I say serving size to you, what do you think of? You think of going to the box and looking at what is a serving size, right?
Right, yes.
They'll say it under the nutrition facts. A serving size is one cup.
Okay.
Or a serving size is one packet. Mm-hmm. In America, to the human brain, a serving size is everything that's on your plate.
Right.
You know
what
I mean?
That's true. Yeah, that's totally true.
And so let's use that Cheesecake Factory example. If you get the big salad, remember this. A serving size to your brain is everything that's in your plate. So what can you do to eat mindlessly? If the food is there in front of you, you're going to eat it, or you're going to eat more than you need to eat. But if you start the meal by taking out a quarter of it and throwing it out, or if you really don't feel good about that, then you can have them, you can say, hey, can I have a takeout container as soon as you get your meal? Mm-hmm. And then you put a quarter of your meal into that takeout
That's
container.
That's a great idea.
Okay, so now your serving size, now your plate has less food in it.
Mm.
So that's what mindless eating, that's the difference between mindless eating and conscious eating.
Okay.
Conscious eating says, I got a big bowl of salad and I'm going to try not to eat it all. Mindless eating takes it out of the picture in the beginning.
That's a great forward thinking and planning. Love it. Let's jump into the next principle, which is another interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful with bulk shopping. And I know people who have families out there, it's kind of a money saver kind of thing. You want to go out, stock up the cupboards. You're trying to be conscious, especially now with the economy the way it is. We're all pinching pennies.
Mm-hmm.
We want to save money. Therefore, we go to Costco, we go to BJ's, and we buy bulk. So we've got all of this food sitting in the cupboard in humongous bags.
Yeah,
what's that going to make us do?
It makes sense, though, to do this, right, to save money, especially when you've got a family you're trying to eat healthy with, right?
Yes.
And I know you've got how many people in your family you've got?
There's five.
Five of you, yeah. So you've got to save money, and that's cool. We're not trying to say don't buy in bulk. But let's talk about one of the studies, and this is just one of many in the book that talk about this concept. But what they did was researchers gave three groups of people a bag of M&Ms and a video to watch. And the instructions were, go home, watch the video, and enjoy the M&Ms. Okay? So
they didn't call me for this test. I wish they would have.
They did not call you for this study. It would have skewed the numbers, I'm sure. And so what happened was they went home, they watched the video, and at the end of the video, the researchers went to their house, collected the video and the bag, okay, and found out, weighing the bag and counting the M&Ms, how much the people ate. Okay? And basically, the three groups were this. One received a half-pound bag of M&Ms, another received a one-pound bag, and the third group received a two-pound bag. Now, what they determined was the group that was given the half-pound bag ate 63 M&Ms, but the group that was given the one-pound bag, mm-hmm, doubled that. They ate 120 M&Ms.
So they got double the size bag, and they ate double the amount.
Right. And then the people who received the two-pound bag, I don't know what the numbers were with them, but they ate more than the group that was that received the one-pound bag, but not quite as dramatic a difference. So the key here is when you have a big bag, your tendency is going to be to eat more of the food.
Right. You're not thinking about portion size at all. You're eating from what you were given.
Right. And like I said, there were other studies that confirmed these results. And you don't want to know what's fascinating is it wasn't just food. It was dog and cat food. When you buy larger bags of dog and cat food, they would have a tendency to feed their animal more of that food.
That's crazy.
It was cereals, pasta, even plant food. When they bought larger bags of plant food, the plant would be fed more of that plant food.
Wow.
And then it also applied to non-consumable items like shampoo. When you buy the Costco brand of shampoo, you use more of it than you would otherwise. So the key here is when you buy bulk, it can be very good for your wallet if you do it right. But if you don't do it right, guess what? You're going to eat up all of those, all of that saved money because you're going to eat more of the food that you buy.
So what would you recommend would be the way to do it right?
It's very simple, really. All you've got to do is when you get these big canisters home, separate them into smaller canisters and containers, right? Into like Tupperware containers, or they make those small containers for cereals and stuff.
Okay, like baggies even if you have to use those.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great.
And, they did another study with spaghetti. And basically what they did was they gave one group a large box of spaghetti and the other group a small box of spaghetti. The trick, though, the curveball was that both boxes had the same amount of spaghetti in them. But the group
just
that
different
was given,
size boxes.
That's correct.
Okay.
The group that was given the large box actually ate significantly more spaghetti than the group given the small box.
Interesting.
All right. So it's all about how you present the food that will determine how much you actually eat, folks. This is the key principle in the book.
Right.
It's about your eyes and your brain. It's not about your stomachs.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so let's go right into principle number three, which really just talks about how it all happens beneath the surface. We all think we know how much we eat. You know,
right.
we eyeball the food and we say, well, that looks like 500 calories worth of food. But we are almost always wrong.
Yes.
And in practically every one of the studies through Dr. Wansing's work, the people who ate, you know, sometimes 30 to 50% more calories than the other group that was given the smaller servings. Mm-hmm. They all thought they ate just as much as the group who ate 30 to 50% less. They had no idea that they had eaten 30 to 50% more calories than the other group. Wow. So it all happens subconsciously. And they, one of the studies that they did in this, or that they reported about in this book, was a study where they took this cheap wine. I think it was like a $2 chuck kind of wine. And, you know, people have this this belief that wines from California have a tendency to be better wines than elsewhere in the United States. So what they did was they took the same $2 chuck wine and they slapped different labels on each one. One group received a wine that said a new wine from California. The other group said a new wine from North Dakota. Now, I don't even think there's any vineyards in North Dakota.
But I don't know if they could grow grapes over there.
The intention was that people would see that it's a North Dakota wine and not have great expectations about it. But so they gave each group the same wine with different labels. And at the end of the study, basically they were asked to rank the wine and the meal. The people who received the California label ranked the wine as much better than the group that received the North Dakota label.
Interesting.
Not only that, but the group that received the California-labeled wine ranked the food as tasting better than the group that received the North Dakota wine. Now, that's not the kicker. The kicker is this. When they asked these people whether or not the origin of the wine will impact what they think of the wine, they all said absolutely not. We don't care where it's from. We only care how good it tastes. But the truth is, their brain, they had no control over it. Their brain had already formulated opinions, not just of the wine, but of the meal, by just because the wine was labeled as being from California, even though they were both identical wines.
That's very powerful.
It's all subconscious, folks. And that's why it's so important to implement these principles right away.
Well, here's another subconscious thing. One of his principles, number four, actually, is don't clean the table. I remember you telling me about the Super Bowl party and how they had all the buffalo wings. One study group, they left all the bones on the table. And the other group, they removed the bones from the table every 10 minutes or so.
Right.
So it was always a clear table with more wings. Which group ended up eating more?
It was absolutely the group that had the table bust. When the table was bust of the finished bones, their brain really had no concept for how much they had eaten.
Right.
And they ate significantly more than the group who were able to see all the bones that they had consumed.
Right. And it's a constant reminder, having the leftover part of the food sitting there reminding you of how much you've just eaten. I mean, don't tell me you don't notice when the bones are sitting there. This is proof in the pudding.
Well, most people don't think it matters. But in fact, it does, guys.
Subconsciously.
Subconsciously. It's all, like I say, happening beneath the surface. That's what we're trying to impact here. So the principle is, don't clean the table until the meal is done, right?
Yes, until you're going to put everything away.
If you're eating chicken wings, this is for your husband, John, because I know
he loves his chicken wings.
Just let the bones there.
Yeah.
You know? We all want this sterile environment when we're eating. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Because if you want to give your brain the signals that you've been eating, it's got to see it. It doesn't feel it. The brain has to see it.
Right. Don't rely on getting that full feeling, because it doesn't. It takes 20 minutes or so. I am going to recommend that they leave the bones on the table next time we go out for dinner.
Thank you very much. Principle number five is, don't make the food too convenient. Now, you know, when we were cavemen, we'd stroll around this green earth looking for food, and we may expend 40 calories just to find 80 calories worth of food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like a piece of fruit on the ground or something.
Oh my gosh, you had to go out and hunt your food. You're probably burning more calories searching for your food and picking your food than you are once you consume your food.
Right. Well, that's one level of this principle. But taking it another step, there was this very fascinating study where the researchers went in and gave a bunch of secretaries a bowl of candy for partaking in a survey, as a gift for partaking in the survey. And in one group, they set the bowl 6 feet away from the desk. On the other group, they set it on their desk. Now, unbeknownst to the secretaries, they were in this study where every night the researchers would go into the secretaries' rooms and count how many Hershey Kisses they ate, and then refill the bowl back up to 30 pieces of candies.
Okay.
So they really didn't have a concept as to how much candy was in the bowl.
The bowl was just always
full. Always full. Okay. For a 30-day period, they did this. Now, when the bowl was on the desks, the secretaries ate approximately 9 candies a day. When that same bowl with the same candy was placed just 6 feet away, which is literally 2 or 3 steps away from the desk, they only ate 4, less than half.
Wow. Yep. Okay, so...
Now, that those five Hershey Kisses amount to 125 calories.
Huh. That's
per day.
And that's exactly what you need to be cutting out to start off this
plan,
right?
For about 10 pounds of fat a year, that's what we're talking about.
So if you have a candy bowl sitting on your coffee table, get up and move it to the cupboard.
Yes, yes, yes.
And it's as simple as that.
It even worked when the researchers simply had the secretaries put the bowl in a drawer. Of the desk.
So it's not sitting there right in front of you.
Correct.
And it's something that comes to mind when you talk about this, and I'm quickly going to wrap this up because I know we're reaching the end of the podcast today. But how about replenishing the candy bowl all the time so other people in the house haven't seen how much has been eaten?
Mm.
You know, if mom is constantly replenishing the bowl, I'm not going to know how much my children are eating. But if you let it go, you know, if you quit replenishing, you'll actually get to calculate. You'll have something to relate it to.
Absolutely. That makes great sense.
Mm-hmm.
So going to principle number 6, eating variety. And we always talk about variety in our meals. You know, we are, as Americans, addicted to food variety, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There are so many choices out there.
Oh,
Most countries you go to a European country and there's like 4 choices of yogurt. Maybe 1 or 2 fruit flavors, a vanilla, and a plain. And that's it. There's no more choices to choose from.
Absolutely. Now
we've got like 80.
Oh yeah,
it's crazy.
And we want 80. That's the thing. But you know, I was thinking about this the other day. Bodybuilders and fitness athletes. What do you guys do when you are preparing for a competition?
Eat pretty much the same thing every day, like day in and day out.
And on your plate, you don't have 5 or 6 different flavors.
No, I don't really worry. I mean, I'm concerned about getting the food groups. I want healthy, you know, healthy vegetables. I always make sure I get those things in. But yeah, I don't put 5 servings of food on my plate by any means.
Oh. No. So let me kind of talk a bit about some of the studies that were done here in reference to food variety.
Okay.
And this is a very fascinating one. Researchers basically gave 2 groups of people these jelly beans. Now, all of the jelly beans they tasted identical, okay? So there was no difference in flavor from jelly bean to jelly bean. The only difference was one group was given a bowl of 4 different colored jelly beans.
Okay.
And the other group was given a bowl of 6 different colored jelly beans, and all the jelly beans tasted the same. The group that was given the 4 different colors ate 40% less than the group that was given the bowl of 6 different colors. All right? So our brain, when it sees variety, it has a tendency to want to eat more of those foods.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we can take it. They took it another level. They basically gave one group a bowl of 6 different colored jelly beans, all tasted the same, but all the jelly beans were kind of mixed in one bowl. The other group, they gave the 6 different colored jelly beans, but each color was in its own separate little vat.
Okay.
And even in that situation, the group that was given the bowl of all the jelly beans mixed together ate more than the group that was given the jelly beans in separate vats.
Okay, all so right? In a nutshell, limit your choices to a lower number.
Within the meal.
Within the meal.
Yes, within the meal. Now, you can have variety from meal to meal, right?
Sure.
That's where you want your variety. In each different meal. But when you're eating...
You don't want a 5-course meal every time you sit down.
Absolutely. Okay. You know, and that's what we do in America, isn't it?
Yeah, especially going out.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And now, the reason they believe this happens is because there's this phenomenon that's called sensory-specific satiety. And basically what that is when you eat the same kinds of foods within the meal, your brain kind of loses its...
like its interest in that particular food. Okay.
Exactly. So that's why we want to keep the flavors and the textures and the colors fairly consistent within the meal. So you might have, say, chicken and rice.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and or maybe something that's kind of more bland, like a salad along with that. Okay. That's not too much. But if you're having chicken, mashed potatoes, and then you have buttered asparagus, and then you have, you know, some corn, you know, now you're and giving your body too much. Right. Variety. And so you're going to end up consuming more food.
That's why buffets are dangerous.
Oh, yeah. That's a great point.
Yeah. The last principle we're going to cover today on mindful and mindless eating is something that you can implement today, right now, at your next meal. If you're sitting down to eat right now, you can do this right now. Cut 20% off from the start. So if you've got a full plate of food, take 20% of that. Put it in a container, throw it away. Right. That way you don't go back for it. Okay. Right. For seconds.
Yeah. And you know what? We have this mentality that throwing food away is bad because there are starving kids in Africa. You eating a bunch of extra calories is not going to help those kids in another country.
Right. Two completely different situations. So, right. Get that thought out of your head right now.
Yes. And because we're talking about your health, people. You know, if you want to dedicate your time to helping the sick, or helping people who are hungry, you can do that, but you need your health to be able to do that. So forget about that whole ridiculous concept, that guilt concept that's placed into our brains by oftentimes our parents and our...
Yeah, that's old school stuff. Let's get to the new age. There's a little quote on here that really rings true to me, and it's your appetite is going to grow to fit your plate. Mm-hmm. So whatever you're used to eating is going to be what you continue to eat unless you consciously make a change, which is exactly what we're talking about today. Use a smaller plate. I know that's something that you've recently implemented in your life.
I went through and I got rid of my big plates in my home and I replaced them with smaller plates.
Great idea.
It's
easy enough to do.
It's simple. But the key is not to overdo it. You don't want to go from eating from a, let's say, a 12-inch plate to eating from a 6-inch plate because your brain's going to catch on to that.
Then you feel like, okay, I mean, I've got to have seconds.
Right. Yeah. So you'll just go back for a second serving.
Right.
So you cut the size of the plate by, let's say, 10 or 20%.
Okay.
And that's all. That's all it takes.
That's an inch
or
two.
That's a subconscious change.
Just go buy yourself some really fancy, nice, cool plates that you've had your eye on. Something colorful that's a little bit smaller than what you currently have in the cupboard.
Right.
Easy.
Right. And I know that Dr. Wansink on his website, that's where I got mine. He actually has some of the smaller plates. Very inexpensive. A set of four, which is four plates, four bowls, and four cups, was like $35.
Huh.
Yep.
Not
so
bad
that's where I got mine.
Mm-hmm. That's perfect. Very cool. And like you said earlier, is if you're out to dinner, take 20% of that meal and put it in a to-go box or ask them to throw it away or ask them to bring out 20% less. Ask them to cut your portion size in half if you know you're going somewhere that serves humongous size portions,
hey,
i.e. the Cheesecake Factory.
That is definitely improvement over just letting them bring the food out. And again, I want to point out that the goal here is to make it subconscious. It's not to look at your big bowl of food and say, I'm only going to eat one half of it.
Right.
That doesn't work, folks. It doesn't work long term, at least.
We're so used to asking for salad dressing on the side or, hey, can you steam those vegetables instead of putting butter on them? Get into the habit of asking them to bring out half the meal or 20% less of the meal. It's okay to ask.
Mm-hmm. Or just do it yourself if you have to.
Or do it
yourself. I don't care how you do it, but do it from the start. Do it from the beginning of the meal.
Yep. That's exactly how it works.
All right, man.
You can implement these today. Oh, that was a lot of information today.
It's a ton of stuff. And guys, we did go over a bit. I know we're running a little bit long today, but I'm hoping that it's worth it to you. You know, we really care about you guys, and we really want you to get some useful information out of this that you can actually put it to use today.
Right now.
Right now. And, you know, check out our website.
A lot of powerful stuff out there. Guys, don't forget we have emails we like to read. We like to do our little mailbox at the beginning of the show. And make sure if you listen to this and you believe in our podcast, recommend it to all your friends. We've got a Facebook page now, Cut the Fat Podcast.
All one word, just search for it.
All one word. Yep, no spaces. Search us, become a fan. Doesn't cost you anything. And you get free updates, you know, quotes and things of the day, as well as we post up a new podcast on there.
There you go. And also, go to iTunes. And if you haven't rated us, please do rate us. It will help us reach more people. You know what, guys? It's been a pleasure, and we're looking forward to a really great year this year. So we really hope that we can help you guys achieve your weight loss and wellness goals.
We know you can do it.
All right, we'll see you guys next time here on Cut the Fat Podcast.
Bye, guys.
The music is provided by the Grilled Lincolns. Check them out at www.grilledlincolns.com. You can also find them on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. Take her by the hand and so that she can hear you. Seems slow today, yeah. That quiet hallway seems so far away, yeah. And I just don't have much more to say, yeah. Well, I'm still soaking wet from all the rain. Looking for a reason, coming up on the season. Opening up the zoo and the cameras wanna see you. Take another breather, wipe it on your sleeve and take it by the hand and it's so that she can hear you. Looking for a reason, coming up on the season. Opening up the zoo and the camels wanna see you. Take another breather and wipe it on your sleeve and take it by the hand and it's so that she can hear you. Just right, just right. I'll be standing on the goal line and it's gonna hit me hard, so damn hard. It's just a simple song for now. It's just another easy way for me to remember how. We're looking for a reason, coming up on the season. Opening up the zoo and the camels wanna see you. Take another breath and wipe it on your sleeve and take her by the hand and so that she can hear you. Looking for a reason, coming up on the season. Opening up the zoo and the camels wanna see you. Take another breath and wipe it on your sleeve and take her by the hand and so that she can hear you. Sha-na-na, sha-na-na.